Hey, this is Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and you're listening to Always Hold On to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined by, from We Made This and Observing the Pattern of Fringe podcast, Luke Winch. What's up, Luke?
Hey, Zach, how are you doing? It's good to be on the show for the first time.
That's right. I've been on your podcast a couple times now talking about Fringe. So everybody go check out not just the TV show Fringe, but Observing the Pattern, the podcast. And Fringe is not that readily available like on Netflix or Hulu or anything, but it is on, it's like on IMDb, Amazon Prime. It's unconventional. You can get to it on streaming, but it's not as clear cut as other shows. And so hoping that Fringe will be more readily accessible in the future, because I know that helped Smallville a lot doing this podcast. So like, I just tell people, hey, check it out, Hulu. Now, Hulu, not international. Like, I don't think, you know, you're in the UK over there. You don't have Hulu isn't over there with Smallville, is it? so what is your preferred method of watching Smallville, Luke?
I have the DVDs. I have all 10 seasons. Season 10 is on Blu-ray, but season 1 to 9 is on DVD. So, and they still hold up all right on the, you know, on my 4K TV. Mm-hmm. So they look all right. They look good. They hold up well.
So you didn't stick with the consistency. You're like, I got to go Blu-ray with season. Since that, I have them all on DVD as well, but I kept it that way because I'm like, well, I don't want it to stick out on my shelf. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it really sticks out because the DVDs look like small books, whereas the Blu-ray DVDs are like really small. So it does stand out.
Well, cool. Well, you know, speaking of how you watch Smallville, tell us a little bit about how you found Smallville, how you found Superman, where your fandom started, that kind of thing.
Yeah, my fandom started really with the Christopher Reeves Superman films. I was never really a comic book reader when I was younger. I've kind of become a geek as the older I get, which is backwards, but never mind. Well, you know, there's ways of doing these things. But yeah, so the Superman films, original Christopher Reeves Superman films, really, really entranced me, and I kind of fell in love with the superhero genre and Superman. And that kind of helped me get into the comics and read some of the big stories and the Justice League. And I started to get into Batman a little bit as well. And then I kind of drifted away from it a bit. I lived in London for a while, so I was busy. I was always doing things, so I didn't get much time to read comics or watch films. And then 2006 came around and Bryan Singer's Superman Returns and Brandon Routh came along. And I got really, really engaged with Superman again, and I thought Brandon Routh did a lovely homage to Christopher Reeve, and you know, there were certain camera lights and camera views where he looked like Christopher Reeve. It was really creepy. So, and then I kind of, you know, I wanted to consume more Superman, and my friend who was a bit more of a super geek than I am or was, he said, "Don't, you know, have you ever watched Smallville?" And I was quite dismissive. I was like, "Oh, you know that Dawson's Creek show with the supernatural powers? Nah, I don't watch that. It's a silly thing." But I think that's about 2009, 2010, which would have been about season 9 of Smallville. And I think I caught a couple of episodes on Sky, which is what it was on in the UK. And I was like, this is really good. So I decided that I'd have to go back to the beginning, which was a lot of episodes. But I wanted to get it done so I could watch season 10 live on TV. So I consumed Smallville over a year, I think, and really fell in love with the show. And I know that you're a fan of the earlier seasons. I think I'm more of a fan of the later seasons because I like more of the comic booky, on occasion, campishness that, you know, that they bring with all these other superheroes. But but yeah,
season 9 is a great season.
Oh, it's a great season.
I totally buy that loopy in for the last half of the show. It's definitely my favorite season of them all.
Yeah.
When they kind of, they're in the Metropolis years down there. And no, let's go. So like, that is your favorite era then, the Metropolis years of the show, it sounds like.
Yeah, I really do. And I really liked it when Lois came in, or later on, because Lois, I don't think, was written particularly well in her first few seasons. But this one, and then especially 8 and 9, where they started to really treat her like Lois Lane.
100%.
Yeah,
I've said that myself in not so many words over and over again on the podcast. They're still working on it. At least she's at the Daily Planet now. There's some things to clean up with the character still. We'll discuss.
Yeah they're transitioning. They're transitioning for sure. Her into a better character, definitely.
Yeah, they're transitioning her into what Chloe has been doing for the last 7 years. So that's well, that's great. So hey, Gemini is what we're talking about today. A Christmas episode of a kind. Smallville Lexmas is the big Christmas episode from season 5. This is kind of like a half Christmas episode. It takes place at Christmas.
Yeah.
There were Christmas lights and decorations, Christmas and presents tree. And things. For a show that ran 10 years, right? You think they would have had more, you know, Christmas specials or... But do you want every mid-season finale, which is what this is, back before mid-season finales were a thing, right? Do you want every mid-season finale to be Christmas, you know? The Arrowverse does that a lot, actually. Early Arrow and Flash, like, it's always like, hey, it's a Christmas
party.
Yeah,
they did it all the time, yeah.
Right? Which is great. Yeah. Who doesn't love Christmas, right? But let's talk about that, right? So this is 2007, right? This is the last episode of Smallville, 2007. And it's the mid-season finale. And this was not... It's so interesting because, like, it wasn't really a thing until the last... I want to say maybe 8 to 10 years on TV where they're like, it's the mid-season finale of Arrow. Or like, it promoted that way. Mid-season finale, right? And Smallville, like, they have a history of sometimes doing, you know, really good mid-season finales and other times just having a random episode. Like last season, season 6, was Subterranean, which was a random episode that was actually supposed to air earlier, and they moved it later. And that's why it's a strange, like, we had a cliffhanger in the previous episode where Lex proposed to Lana. I'm talking about Static in season 6 now.
Right, yeah.
That would have been your that's a much more logical mid-season finale cliffhanger than
you
know, what we got in Subterranean, leftover episodes from earlier in the season. Lexmas, again, you know, that was a kind of set up, you know, Lex's senatorial run and that sorts of things. Season 4, complete nothing, Scared. Which is like, it's the Scarecrow gas episode, right? It's like, what is this? Doesn't lead to build up to anything. Season 4, they had some behind the scenes issues with actors and whatnot. Christopher Reeve was supposed to be a big role, and he unfortunately passed away. They bring in Jane Seymour, and so they're figuring all that stuff out. That probably played a role there. Season three is like the most mid season finale esque of the show. We have Shattered, which is one of the best episodes of the show. Lex is in the asylum, which leads to the next episode of Asylum. It's a clear 1-2-parter. So like, all right, that's a mid-season finale right there. You think like, okay, this is going to be the pattern, season 3. And then it's not really the pattern, you know?
Yeah, even though I said that the later seasons are my favorite, actually my favorite ever season is season 3. I think it's the most structurally complete of all the seasons. I love the Lex and Lionel storyline. I think it's one of the strongest storylines for those two. But yeah, it has a definite mid-season finale. It has a fantastic season finale and one of the best montages there is, I think, in Smallville.
Absolutely. So yeah, and season 3, I mean, if I say the early seasons are my favorite, then of those three, I'd say season 3 is the best of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then season 9 is, again, probably after season 3, I think season 9 is probably the best structurally. We've planned something out, we've executed it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a clearly an arc to things and a payoff to setups, and sometimes, you know, other times they're just like season 7 is just, it's all kind of out there, lots of retcons, lots of things they're trying and maybe not sticking, characters they introduce and then immediately take off the board, like Supergirl. I was becoming a big fan of Kara on the show. And then she nonsensically disappeared and had amnesia at the end of the last episode, and now she's gone. And she'll come back for a couple episodes, and then she'll be gone again. And then be like in 3 more episodes of the show, which is a complete waste of that character and the actress. So what are you doing, Smallville? Get it together. But anyway.
Yeah, because they marketed the hell out of her, didn't they? And she ended up being like 10 episodes or something like that.
Yeah, for season 7, she, I mean, friend or foe, right? It's new girl in town, all those things, right? A new main character. She went straight to the opening credits, right? Mm. Lois and Jimmy had to earn their spot. They had to put in a year of being a special appearance by or whatever, like in the credits. And then they got into the opening credits. Laura Vanderroot was straight into the opening credits, and then only for one season. So anyway, but we're talking about Gemini this episode. Now, got the DVDs. Did you happen to watch the deleted scenes?
I didn't actually, and I should have, and I'm kicking myself for not doing it.
Many are asked, most say no when asked about the deleted scenes. So there's a couple of deleted scenes. They happen early in the episode, so we'll just kind of get them out of the way here so that we can just talk to the episode. But there are a couple of deleted scenes for Gemini. One is an extended... So the scene where Lois and Grant are making out in the closet or whatever, right? So there, that scene goes on, and after that, it's them coming out of the broom closet, wherever they're supposed to be, storage closet, and they're talking about the Lex Luthor interview, you know. Right. So it's more of that. So just an extended part of that, which is interesting because like how long? When is Lex coming in for this interview? Like 9 o'clock at night or something? Because I thought this is like everyone's leaving work at this point, and they're talking about this interview. So I don't know. Lex had a busy day. So anyway, it was just more Grant and Lois. So I'm all for deleting that. I'm not a fan of them or their relationship, and we can dive into that as we discuss. And then there's another scene. Again, it would have been early in the episode. I'm thinking this might have been the first scene after the opening credits. It's Christmas at the Kent farm. They obviously use some stock footage from Lexmas when everything's all Christmassy, right? But it's Lana coming home, and it's an empty house. You know, it's establishing Clark's been gone for a while. But then Jimmy comes over to check on Lana in one of their four scenes they ever shared together on the show. He's looking for CK, wanted to ask about Kara because Kara's been gone. This would have been helpful, but to kind of like transition Jimmy from Kara back to Chloe because like they were, him and Kara were like a thing for a hot minute, and now it's back to Chloe here in this episode. But Lana does tell Jimmy that dating a Kent isn't easy, but it's worth the wait. So
7 years. 7 year wait.
That's right, indeed. So that scene I definitely would have tried to find a way to keep. But anyway, there you have it. Those are your deleted scenes for the episode. And, you know, we'll just knock out the spoiler now. Bizarro is who we see in this episode. We do not see Clark Kent until the very end when it's revealed that he's been frozen up there in the fortress since the end of Blue. And in Smallville, the official companion, season 7 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold, the writer of this episode, Carolyn Dries, had this to say, quote, "I was impressed that the Bizarro reveal didn't leak and by the fans who realized something was off. I think Tom nailed it. He played it very well. Somebody pretended to be somebody else. I was so happy about that." And then creator and executive producer Al Goff had this to say, quote, "The fun of Gemini was that you think it's Clark throughout the show, and then you realize it's not. There are obviously hints that it's not Clark, and I think that a good fan could figure out a couple of the acting choices in there. It's fun, where you realize that the only reason he saved Chloe, of course, is that he needed her for information and help later." So watching it fresh, I don't think I would have caught this. But unfortunately, I was spoiled about this back in the day. This is an episode I didn't see immediately. Like, I recorded it, but I hadn't watched it yet. And I was waiting to watch it maybe with, you know, friends or something. I don't know. But back in the day, Superhero Hype was like the go-to website for these kinds of things. And there was the Superhero Hype forums. And this is 2007, so there's two sub-forums. There's Smallville and there's Heroes. That's it. There are no other. Imagine that. Imagine a world where there's only two superhero shows, Smallville and Heroes, right? And this is like the height of Heroes as well. So I'm thinking like, man, like Smallville's kind of tailing off, and Heroes is picking up. And, you know, it's funny how it all works out, right? But I remember I was just scrolling through like one of the threads, and I just clicked one too many times, and I saw like there was a GIF. This is like early in the GIF world, right? There was a GIF of Clark's face going, becoming Bizarro. I was like, oh my God, right? And I don't mind. I mean, it wasn't like a... it would have been cool to see it, just not knowing that, how it blew my mind. And I'm sure for a lot of people it did. But it's kind of interesting, like, waiting for that, watching the whole episode, waiting for that moment. I mean, to me, it would have been a clue that he came back from the fortress wearing a different outfit. That's just me. But Luke, did it blow your mind at the end of this episode when you realized that it was Bizarro the whole time?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I was lucky enough... not to have it spoiled. And coming back to it now as well, I really, really studied Tom Welling's performance in this episode because I wanted to look for any kind of micro emotional movements in his face or any a change in his posture or and I think I noticed stuff. It might have just been me imprinting my own kind of impressions onto it, but I think I may have spotted a few moments where I think, okay, that's not the Clark we know. So it was interesting to watch this episode this time through and really study Tom Welling's performance to see if he was purposely putting those little kind of differences and inflections in his speech and so forth.
Yeah, if anything, it's a little understated, I think. A little more held back, perhaps. It's very subtle.
Yeah.
But I think it works.
Yeah. I'm not sure season 3 acting Tom Welling could have pulled it off, but I think he's really grown in his acting abilities over the 6-7 years that he's done it now. So, he has the ability to actually pull these small little things off now, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I 100% agree with you. He has seriously matured as an actor over the course of the show, and it's cool to see that.
Yeah.
And he really gets to shine when he plays not Clark, obviously. And I guess before we jump into it, then talking about Bizarro, let's talk about it now, because at the end it's just a quick flash and we're on to the end. But did you like the Bizarro of Smallville?
It was okay. The kind of Kibi look on his face was a very basic, but effective special effect for what they could do in the day on the budget that they had at the CW. So yeah, it worked for me. I like the way Tom Welling plays Bizarro. I think it's really fun, and he's obviously having a lot of fun playing Bizarro. So I think the main emphasis is on the performance rather than the special effects. So yeah, no, I like Bizarro, and I kind of like the storyline that they have in season 7 and him wanting to bring Brainiac back and so forth and that kind of storyline. So, and that really kind of starts to bubble in this episode as well. So yeah, no, I quite like Bizarro, and the effects were what they were at the time, and that's fine. But it's Tom Welling's performance, I think, that really sells it.
Yeah, we don't get to hear his deep voice this episode, though. That's my favorite. My favorite part about Bizarro. You don't deserve this life, Clark.
didn't have that deep voice in season 6. They hadn't figured that out yet, right?
I forgot about that.
That's my favorite part about Bizarro.
Yeah.
If they would have, honestly... And rewatching it has not changed my mind on this. They should have just called him something else, like another evil Clark or duplicator, because he came from a Phantom Zone guy who duplicated his... This is not Bizarro from the comics, right? And they had all the lead up to it. You had a cloning super soldier program and Clark's blood and kryptonite. It was all there for them to have Lex or Luthor Corp make a Bizarro. But then I guess it's like, he looks just like Clark. I guess that's too... But if they do the whole white skin and the blocky, it could look kind of like Clark, but kind of... Anyway, they went for a radically different approach. One of the least faithful adaptations of a comic book character I think the show has done, honestly. So, I don't know. When you hear they're going to have Bizarro, it's very exciting because he's probably one of your most iconic Superman villains just because people know, it's reverse Superman, right? Mm-hmm. But none of that is here, other than the blue shirt, red jacket switch where he's wearing a red shirt, blue jacket. Like, they really lean into that, which doesn't work quite as well when Clark himself wears this costume. On the complete series DVD box set, Clark himself was wearing the red shirt, blue jacket. So it was a kind of a cute thing. Like, oh yeah, Bizarro. But like, guys, come on, you're leaning too far into it. So... Talking about it not being spoiled, the writer of the episode was excited about that. And that's easy to hide because it's Tom Welling. It's like, I remember when Logan came out, and people were like, well, who's the villain in Logan? Who is he going to fight? And the biggest twist is, oh, it is Logan. It's Hugh Jackman. He was there the whole time. You never saw. So you don't have to cast a villain and who's he going to play, all that nonsense. It's just, no one's going to say, hey, Tom Welling was on the set of Smallville today. What does it mean? So that would have been a good way to sneak in him in some more. And they did an effective job here. If I had not been clicking too much on the internet back in the day, I would have never known. So that was a good twist there. But let's get into it. Gemini.
You've been ignoring me.
You got the wrong person here. It's not my phone.
I know, but it's not easy getting your attention, Lane. You erased my emails, you tossed my letters. I'm trying to help you bring down Lex Luthor.
I appreciate that, but when it comes to Luthor Corp conspiracies, a lot gets tossed in the crazy bin.
See if this gets me to the top of the pile, Lane. There's a bomb on your cousin. If you try to get help, you so much as whisper a single word to anyone, Chloe dies. Do I have your attention now?
Gemini is the 9th episode of Smallville's 7th season and aired on December 13th, 2007. It was written by Caroline Dries and directed by Whitney Rancic. So the episode starts out with everybody's favorite couple, Grant Gabriel and Lois Lane, making out in the storage closet. So what are your thoughts on this relationship and Grant Gabriel, Luke?
Oh, Grant Gabriel is one of the worst characters. I think he's badly written. I don't mind the actor, but I just think he's bad in this. And whether that's the writing or him, I don't know. But what I don't like, and this is my problem with early Lois, is that the character of Lois from season 4 onwards is defined by her character is defined by the man she's with. And you know, she had Arthur Curry, she had Oliver Queen, now she's got Grant Gabriel. She's going through all these men. And I didn't like how her character was defined by whatever man she's with at that time. And yeah, the Grant Gabriel thing, it's like, you know, it's the old sleeping with your boss and are you getting all the good jobs because you're in with your boss and all that kind of thing. And, you know, and she's thinking about that because she's, you know, wanting to get taken off the Lex Luthor expose because she's really worried that everyone's going to worry that she's the teacher's pet.
Right. Well, so, the line that she has here is she wants to know that, quote, the only part of my body earning the story is my reporter's nose. That was a good, yeah. Like, I hate this setup, but that's actually a funny line. I like that. But it turns out that Lex requested her, why would Lex request her for this? You think just to screw with everybody? Like, because he knows that Grant likes her and is kind of just stoking that fire, I guess, somehow.
Yeah, I mean, it's never really, we're never really told, are we, why he chose her? But I think maybe he has an idea of their intimate relationship and he wants to kind of put a crowbar in that somehow. But I also think that maybe he's got plans for Lois or he wants to keep a tight rein on her in some way, which, you know, when he buys the paper, he certainly can keep a tighter rein on her. So I don't know what his motives were explicitly, but you can probably look into that in various different ways.
And then after this scene is where that deleted scene would have been, where they come out of the closet and they talk in the hallway, right? That's the first deleted scene. So it would have been here, but then they skip over that and we didn't really need that scene. So the edit works great because Grant's like, well, Lex requests you. She's like, what? And then we cut to Chloe. I'm like, okay, that's a good edit. And Chloe's calling Clark her daily freakout call because he's been gone for 2 weeks, I think she says.
Yeah.
So two weeks. So he's been gone for 2 weeks. And then Bizarro comes back and it's Christmas now. And the next episode, Persona, it's not all the Christmas stuff is gone. So we're just going to, and this is not on Christmas Eve, I don't think. It's like just around Christmas. So we're going to say, I don't know how long Bizarro was living as Clark, but a month, maybe more? I don't know. But we'll get into it, I guess, in the next episode, Persona. So Clark's gone for a significant amount of time. Lois asks Chloe about it. And she's like, oh, he's in Minnesota, because that's the cover story for Kara. Now, I had thought the show had done real good continuity with where Clark's cousin was from. Apparently, so the first Supergirl, because there must be two. Smallville always has two of everything. The first Supergirl, played by Adrian Padalecki. I think that's how you say her last name. Jared Padalecki has completely confused me on... You guys know who I'm talking about. Anyway, Friday Night Lights, Wonder Woman pilot, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., right? Aquaman pilot.
Orville.
Yeah, everybody knows who she is, right? Anyway... He told Lana that his cousin was from California and Covenant, the season 3 finale, not Minnesota. I thought it was Minnesota. It's a state that ends in an A. Give me a break. but anyway, that's the cover story that Chloe's like, oh yeah, Clark's in Minnesota. So luckily you have this cousin show up, you know. You know what? It's thinking about this, Clark is missing, right? Clark is missing and has amnesia. Or no, I'm sorry. Clark is missing. Kara is also missing and has amnesia. Why not just have them both had in the same situation? Have Kara wake up in Detroit and Clark wake up in, I don't know, California or whatever, and they have amnesia and they're doing their thing, as opposed to Kara's made no sense and Clark is being frozen by Jor-El. But I guess they had to have the wrap up with Lana and Clark to kind of make up. Because Cole even mentions like Lana said you guys made up before you went to the fortress. So there is all that, all the wrap up with the mom and all this, you know, Tim talking about his mom. You see my point though? Like, we have these two characters that are been removed, but the mechanisms by which it's happened are totally different, and it feels very strange is all.
The whole thing with Clark being frozen by Jor-El, because the last time we saw him, it was like him being enveloped by a bright light.
Yeah,
and
zooming
that's
in on him. Oh, what's going to happen? Yeah.
And that's him being encased in ice. And then Bizarro comes back. How does Bizarro know that Clark isn't there?
He tells Brainiac in the next episode, he's like, well, I think he's dead. He would have come back by now. I'm like, that is such a leap of logic, right? It's so strange.
It's a huge leap of logic. It's massive. I mean, yeah. He could come back at any point
right.
while he's living as him. So that's always really confused me. And it's a bit, I don't know, it's a bit of a weak element to the story. But, you know, it is weird that they've got these two characters who are not in the show for an episode, considering it's called Smallville and it's about the Kents. You know, they're not in it. So, yeah, it is a weird thing to do. I mean, this is much more about a Lois Lane episode, really, isn't it? It's a Lois Lane led episode, I think, for the most part.
And a Grant Gable episode, our favorite guy. But yeah, so Chloe and Lois have a couple lines here. Lois is like, "Oh, I guess Clark's gonna have to wait to fix the satellite until he gets back," and you know, it's silliness. And Chloe apparently compiled all the information on Luther Corp and gives it to Lois. I'm like, y'all, like, why? Way to be an investigative reporter, Lois. Chloe is still doing the work and handing it over to you. It's not a good look. It's not a good look for Lois and her evolution as a reporter, right? But there's a phone on Lois's desk, and it starts ringing. It's a mysterious person. We just see close-ups of like his voice and his lips and all that, and the phone and those sorts of things. He's going to bring down Lex Luthor, but he has a bomb on Chloe. Sets up the whole premise of the episode. So is there a movie like this? I don't really think that this is not a movie plot as an episode. It feels like a trope, but I can't think of an exact copy of anything. So unless you could.
This is the phone booth and speed mushed into one 45-minute episode.
All right, well, we'll give him creativity for mixing those two things together. So we'll go with that. But we go to opening credits and we come back. And this is where I think the other deleted scene would have gone with Lana coming home and it's empty and Jimmy stops by, right? That would have made sense there. But here's the thing, right? Lois is wearing the same outfit this whole episode. So this is all the same, presumably the same night, right? And the game we love to play here is what day is it, what time is it? Thinking about the scene, Lois and Grant were just making out in the closet. They left. Lex's interview was going to be that same day. So we, you know, after we come back from the credits, where do we go? We go to Luther Mansion, and Lex is fencing with Grant Gabriel. Did he go to Smallville and then they came back together for this interview? You know what I'm saying? Like, what is this? What is the logic of the timeline here?
There is no logic of the timeline here unless Lois has no change of clothes for a couple of days. She's wearing the same blouse for the entire for two, because it must be different. I mean, yeah, because he was in the closet with her, then he drives all the way to Smallville to the mansion, has some fencing.
We can say he took the helicopter, maybe. So that's like 30
Could
minutes.
Could have taken a helicopter, yeah.
But I guess, we shouldn't have to fill in these plot holes, but we're just going to... When you have a character in a location, in an outfit, established, you don't have a random other scene with him somewhere else and then have him back in the exact same spot. That doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
Maybe the episode should have started with this fencing scene. That's... By the way, I really did like that Deck the Halls remix when Lois and Grant were making out. That was just a fun Christmas. Anyway, continuity as far as the locations of these characters is a little confusing. But it's a very Luther thing to do, right? Lex is, as we have found out, Grant Gabriel is Julian Luther, which the timeline on that doesn't make sense, by the way. If he was really Julian Luther, he would be much younger. Because Julian was born after Lex lost his hair. So at the earliest, he's like 1990 or something.
Didn't he die when Lex was 12? I think Lex was 12.
Okay, so let's do the math then. Okay, so if Lex was 12, Lex is like 28 here, right? I mean, like, I believe Lex is supposed to be 21 in the first season.
Right.
And this is season 7, so we'll say he's 28, you know, just for rough numbers. So that means Julian is 16. Right?
Okay, yeah.
Because Grant Gabriel doesn't, this the whole episode is about him finding out he's a clone. He thinks he was the real Julian Luther. So you done messed up, Smallville. Like, it's
okay, my head is melted. I can't
I just don't, okay. They should not have done that. This is hallowed ground. This is some Luther backs memorials, one of the best episodes of the show, the whole Julian Luther thing. And to screw around with that, even for, like, because, you know, you spin the whole, like, before they reveal he's a clone and stuff, you're like, that's outrageous. You know, like, you're really mad that, like, they retconned that. In a season of retcons. Literally everything is a retcon in season 7. Krypton, Veritas, right? Everything is a retcon. And that's another one, right? The Julian Luther thing. It turns out that, no, everything we saw did happen the way it did. This episode reveals how Lex cloned Julian. But the fact that Grant Gabriel is walking around thinking he really is Julian Luther doesn't make any sense. Like, he should be a teenager. But all this is coming to the front now because I'm you know, thinking about Lex and Julian fencing like brothers and stuff like here. Grant is actually, he confronts, he's like, why do you want Lois Lane to write this? He's like, I have nothing to hide. So, again, I think he's just screwing with her. You know, just like at the end, he's like, Merry Christmas, Lois. So, but anyway.
Yeah.
There you go. And we'll get into that at the end here. So then we have Lois at the Daily Planet at her desk typing away. It is amusing to see her try and get the message out that she's in trouble. Like, she's typing and printing, but Adrian is one step ahead. We'll take some screenshots of some of this stuff because it's pretty entertaining. But she's scanning around the room, right, to see who might be on the phone, because clearly it's like whoever is talking to her can see what she's doing. So it's smart to kind of look around and see who actually might be here. She locks eyes with like this delivery guy.
Actually, Korea.
And she thinks it's him. Then she follows him, right, and attacks him, basically. And he's like, whoa, yeah, I was staring, you're babe, right? So what did you think of this guy?
Well, for starters, if you think a woman's attractive, if you think you're a babe, you don't look at them like this courier delivery guy looked. I mean, he looked at her like, I don't know, he wanted to murder her or something. It wasn't an endearing, admiring look. It was a look of some other kind. So that was a bit weird and off. But yeah, he has, you know, he has every right to go and get security because she just knocked him over the head with, what was it, a stapler? A large stapler she had that she cocked him over the head with. So yeah, he's quite funny. You're a babe. It's just such a horrible, douchey thing to say, isn't it?
And then she's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. She's like, and he's like gonna go get security. He's like, you're crazy, lady, which is a pretty reasonable reaction. But due to her guessing this guy was the person on the phone and he wasn't, she by proxy killed this guy. I mean, there's not a category for Lois kills on our tally board, but basically she's responsible for this guy's death because Adrian stabs him in the back with some scissors. He comes stumbling back in and Lois is like, hey, you know, I said I was sorry. And then it turns out that he just collapses. The classic, you can't tell that someone's been impaled in the back and they collapse. Way to go, Lois. That would weigh on my conscience if I got that guy killed by accident, right? Because that's the threat here. Right? The threat from the guy is like, if you tell anyone about this, I'm going to kill Chloe. I'm going to kill, you know, whoever you talk to. So anyway, I think they do a pretty good job setting her up in an impossible situation. Because you would think, like, why doesn't she just text or email? And they answer all those questions, I think.
Yeah, I think they rack up the tension really well. And I think when the courier comes back with the scissors in his back, she knows that she's in a situation where she has to start doing what she's told. Because if she tries anything else, then someone very close to her, i.e. Chloe, will be destroyed. I did wonder, just before that, when she's trying to send the email, and it says email failed, and she looks behind her computer and she says she's just cut wire. It's like, what does this cut wire represent? I mean, her computer's working.
It's the wire to the Ethernet?
Her phone's working.
I guess so.
It could be the internet cable, but I don't know. It was
visual
really
language
funny.
Of storytelling. Like, I don't know, but it is.
Yeah, but that does prompt her to then look around the room. So,
right, that's what triggers that.
See.
Yeah. And she just picked the wrong guy, right? Because when he calls her back, he's like, I'm going to clean up your mess. Right. So I guess he's going to take care of the dead body. Right. But then we cut back to where he is in the Daily Planet bullpen watching Chloe. So Wait, so this is interesting because Lois is in a tough spot, I guess, because like she does want to take down Lex Luthor, but like this is not the way. You know, these mysterious phone calls and stuff like that. But anyway, she has to write this. Like, he's going to make her write this story. Now she's tried a couple of things to get out of it. It's clearly not going to work. So she's going to have to go back to her desk and get to work after this. But we cut to the Kent farm, and Lana's just doing her thing, right? Tending to horses. And I'm like, how many barns do the Kents have? Because sometimes there are horses there, sometimes they're not. I don't know. But right now, maybe because Lana lives there now, there's horses. Clark is here. He's back. And, you know, Bizarro thinking on his feet. That's why I wanted to just get it out of the way. He's Bizarro, because we can talk about his performance here off the top. But she's like, Clark, you've been gone for so long. He's like, oh, time's different at the fortress. I'm like, okay, that's fair. That's fair. And she's just willing to believe anything, which really comes really goes in overdrive in the next episode, where she's just willing to believe anything that this guy tells her. But would she not notice? This is the problem when you wear the same thing all the time, every day. If you get impersonated by a doppelganger, people can't tell the difference, right? Because it's like, although he was wearing the reverse blue shirt, red jacket, you know what? Actually, you know what? Let's give the show a little bit more credit. The last time Lana and Clark were talking, he was wearing this red shirt, blue jacket combination. When he went to the fortress by himself, he was wearing the blue shirt, red jacket. Perhaps she didn't see him change. Maybe she thinks this is what he's wearing. I'm going to give the show a little bit of a doubt. But the costume changes really do come into play, especially in the next episode. But anyway, so Lana and Clark, they're back. Everything's fine. So Clark, he got home. He'll be home for Christmas. He's back. So
yeah, I like how Bizarro, and again, quick thinking, because Lana asks him, did he find Kara? Now, Bizarro absorbed Clark's memories before Clark met Kara, right? So he wouldn't have any memories of her at all. So therefore, Bizarro wouldn't have any memories of her. So when Lara's asking about Kara, Lana, Kara, Lara, Kara, I get mixed up. Lana,
four-letter words, two A's. Yeah, a lot of repetitive names in Smallville, for sure.
So, I mean, he has no knowledge of Lana, does he, Bizarro?
No.
So he gives a very good, vague answer, which is, there's nothing I can do. We need to move on. So it's answer the question, move on quickly.
Sorry. Yeah. Like, oh, okay. And she's just like, well, that's going to be hard. Well, what matters is I'm here now, right? I'm like, okay. So she tells Clark, Zorro, unknowns to her, that, you know, I missed you, but this being apart was good for us. I had some time to think about, you know, the Lex and her fixation, all that stuff. And Zorro's like, tell me everything. Which I always think, starting with the crystals, which is what Superman Returns the Lion is. They showed in the trailer so many times. It's a very common phrase, but for Superman fans, we know what it is. And then Lana takes him to ISIS headquarters, right? The unfortunately named ISIS.
Oh, boy, that's so unfortunate now, isn't it?
So it's strange that she takes him to the ISIS Foundation here, and the TV screens are all covered up. Right, they're all like it's as if it had been shut down, but they're all on. Like, I'm like, this doesn't make any sense, right? It should either be like, no, why are you wasting electricity and power on all these machines that you have tarps over right now? You know what I mean?
Could there be like a motion control, so when she walks into the building, it triggers all the computers to turn on? Maybe.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Headcanon. Headcanon accepted.
So Bizarro, his objective here is to be like, it's cool, Lana. You know, Lex is the villain here, not you. So again, this is, I mean, and for his, I mean, the thing is, he's impersonating Clark, but we got to remember he does have all those memories, you know, so he can use that to his advantage. He's not just some shapeshifter who's not going to remember stuff. He knows enough about these characters and their interactions that Bizarro can use. So he finds this folder, right? This Project Scion. And they're looking for Scion is not the title of this episode, but it's the title for an episode in season 10, right? So they're looking for Brainiac, basically. And Lana pulls up these pictures of Lex holding the vial, which is a screenshot from the previous episode, right? It's what on every screen. So it's very, I found that very entertaining. So
yeah, definitely. Here it is in multiplication.
So I was like, so what's going on? And she's like, well, I think it's time you see everything that I found. Like, oh, what is it going to be? I don't know. But then we cut to the Daily Planet Metropolis, and we see everything is decked out for Christmas. We got reindeer around the Daily Planet and stuff. That's pretty cool. And Lois is, she's resorted to writing on a an envelope to the mail lady, basically. And she writes "bomb on you" and writes it on the back, right? And then she gives it to this mail. This is a very entertaining sequence because it's this old lady who's the mail lady and wearing a Santa hat, pushing the mail around. She's moving so slow. And Lois sees that Chloe's getting ready to leave. And she's like, "hurry up, lady." It is pretty amusing, right?
Yeah, that's great. And I love the fact that she's written this. Well, not written. She's done it in like dot pattern, bomb on you, which is very reminiscent of the Jaguar owner in Speed when he's told by Keanu Reeves to write "bomb on bus" and then hold it up to the bus driver and it slaps on the window and he's like, "oh my God, there's a bomb on the bus."
Yeah.
So it reminded me of that a lot. But yeah. That scene when she's waiting for this lady who we see later is it when she's at the lift door when Chloe and Jimmy have stopped kissing and they've been saved by Bizarro and the lady's there with her glass of punch looking very distastefully at them.
Yeah, I gotta say the extra game is strong in this episode. It's funny how busy the Daily Planet is. Usually it's like nobody's down there, but this is like the busiest time of the year, right? If it was a normal day, Lois could have easily found Adrian, because there've been like two people in the bullpen there, right? But so Chloe is, you know, she's getting ready to leave. She's like, "hey, Clark's back, so I'm gonna, you know, do that. I'm gonna go see him or whatever." And Lois is like, "ah," but then she gets a text from Adrian, like, "don't think about it, don't do it," right? So she's like, "all right, well, have fun." Chloe does take the package though, so at least there's that. So maybe she'll flip that envelope over at some point and find out, right? But
I don't think Lois is very good at the acting keeping calm scenario, because when and Chloe clearly sees this, because, you know, she asks Lois twice, "are you okay?" Because she's, you know, her eyes are shifting all over the place, she's twitching around. It's like, you know, you need to up your game when it comes to trying to act normal in a very tense situation.
Yeah, because it's very clear that something is not right. But Chloe's like, "okay, well, whatever. Also, have Merry Christmas, Mario. I'll see you later." So we cut the commercial. We come back, and Lana is taking Clark Bizarro to see someone in quarantine. We got ISIS and quarantine in one episode. It's very topical for the early 2020s here, but
very
late 20 teens, I guess. But
yeah,
she it's this the assistant, the doctor's assistant from Wrath, who we saw Brainiac in Habit, is being in quarantine here, and she keeps repeating this this phrase, and she has all the metal has been taken from her body, like all the metal, iron, all those elements have been taken from her body. So she's like in this weird coma repeating this Kryptonian phrase, and Clark Bizarro understands it. Right. And these are all these subtle acting decisions Tom Welling's making. He just seems very calm and collected and adult. I don't know how else to describe it, but I think his reaction's like, this still tracks as Clark though. Like, it wouldn't feel out of place, but looking back on it, you're like, okay, I can see how he's playing it a little bit differently here. Right.
Yeah. I think if it was Clark, I think there would have been a directing choice when he says, "you know, I know what it is, it's Kryptonian language." I think he may have turned to Lana and been a bit more, "oh my God, it's Kryptonian language." You know, been a bit more emotive and maybe a bit more slightly over the top than the understated performance that he's giving as Bizarro in this calm, cool and collected man. Because, you know, Bizarro obviously, he's obviously got a formulating a plan to get Brainiac kind of reactivated, so it's interesting that these things are falling into place for him, and he's very calm, because I think things are going in some way, they're going the way he wants them to, whereas I think Clark would have been a bit more surprised by this,
or see it as a problem to solve and a mystery and be worried about the person. And so I was like, "ooh, really interesting." And so this is off the books basically as well, which is, I'm sure Bizarro appreciates all this shady Lana stuff more than Clark would.
Oh yeah.
This is a hospital visit plus one, by the way. because they're clearly in a hospital facility of some kind. ISIS Foundation transferred her down there. What is this? It's like, what did this foundation start like 2 months ago, and now it's like some big thing? And I know she has millions of dollars from Lex, but still.
Are they in the ISIS Foundation when they show when they're there, or are they in a Luther Corp facility?
I'm not sure where they are. They're in some sort of hospital room with like vials and shelves and a bed and stuff. So I'm going to count it as a hospital
poorly lit
visit
as well.
And the hallways look. They've turned. You know what? To their credit, they didn't make it the Smallville hospital. Right? That was a. Sometimes when they do that, it makes no sense. Like, why would you go to the Smallville hospital when you're in Metropolis? It makes no sense, right? But Clark Bizarro starts drawing the Kryptonian, and then we come back to the Daily Planet, and it's your classic. Stuck in an elevator. So Chloe goes in this elevator, and she's about to have it all to herself. Nothing's more satisfying than having an elevator to yourself.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's a good feeling, you know? But at the last second, a hand stops the door, and who is it but Henry James Olsen? He is here, and it's awkward because they were exes, but they're gonna share the elevator together, Luke.
Yeah, it's one of those... let's put these two characters together in a life-threatening situation so they have a heart-to-heart and some home truths are said. So it's one of those... It's manufactured that way, isn't it? But I do... Do you know what? Henry James not being Jimmy, that's another thing that really, really bugged me as well about Smallville. But that's another episode for another time.
Hey, you know what? And to be fair, that was not Season 7's fault. That was Season 8. And that might be the biggest retcon the show has ever done. I don't know if it's Henry James Olsen or the Veritas Window. One of the two is the worst. But in The Companion, writer Carolyn Dries had this to say about Jimmy and Chloe in the elevator. Quote, "That was my favorite part of the episode. Anytime you have two characters stuck in an elevator, something's going to come out. For us, we wanted to change the dynamic between Chloe and Jimmy and ask how this regular guy is going to deal with the fact that the girl he loves is a meteor freak. I think it worked. And it was really fun writing the dialogue for them." I'm not really a fan of Chloe and Jimmy's relationship on either end of it. I didn't like him when he showed up because I was like, Chloe and Clark should have gotten back together after Season 6 started, right? And then him and Kara, I was like, okay, this is kind of, you know what, unexpected, but had some precedent in the comics for Supergirl and Jimmy. And I was fine with that. And then we're moving in that direction because Chloe was just an awful girlfriend to Jimmy. Like, if you look at she's just lampshading him and lampshading. Is that the right? No, is
it gaslighting
and all those terms. Lampshade means something else. I'm not going
to shade somebody, isn't it? That means something. I don't know what it means.
Yeah. But anyway, I was like, you know what, man, as someone who wanted to date Chloe and when I was this age, I was like, well, I guess it worked out because she seems like a pretty bad girlfriend. So that kind of got me out of that. But you know what? They had sort of moved on. It was supposed to be tragic, but I never liked their relationship to begin with. So when she just can't tell him that she's a meteor freak and he's like, well, I guess we're done. He walks off and she's crying like, you know what? Fine. Let's move on from that. But then to come back to it, they just broke up again. This was like the Cure, which was the fourth episode. Five episodes later, they were already putting them back together. And then in there just like for a hot second was Kara and Jimmy. And I was more interested to see where that might go. But yeah, this is a classic trope of, you know, as you said, the characters in the elevator. Even the writer, you know, says that as well. And then through this conversation, the elevator stops and they flip over the envelope and they see Lois's note that she's got a bomb on her. So
yeah, yeah.
So now we're devil. We're M. Night Shyamalan's devil.
Yeah, I'm the same as you. I was never really a fan of Jimmy and Chloe. And I'm quite glad that even though they do have this heart-to-heart in the elevator, when they're out of the situation and alive and Chloe has a chance to actually think about it and she says, you know, that kiss was a mistake and whatever. So I'm kind of glad they went that way at the end of the episode. But yeah, I was never a fan of them, but I did quite like these scenes in the elevator. I think they're good fun.
They do mention the Christmas party.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you're going to go to that, and it's funny because it does pay off at the end. Like, oh, I don't have anyone to go with this year. I had my eyes on. Yeah, okay, we get it. All right. They're so adorable. The Christmas party we didn't see last year.
The elevator music is really loud as well.
Yeah, it's just not. Well, it's Christmas. It's not just loud.
It's so loud.
I find it's, I think it's intentionally obnoxious, I think. Yeah. So I find it funny that way. Like, it's the juxtaposition of this happy Christmas. She's like in a horrible situation where we're going to die, right? So we have a first draft of Lois's Luther Corp's first functioning clone article. So we'll take a screenshot of that. Those are always fun to read, right? But Lois has printed it out and is ready to go. And oh, by the way, she sees the elevator's out of service. So clearly Adrian has done that as well, doing his handyman thing. So that works. So she has her her piece of paper here, and she's going to go. And Cones as well in front of the elevator, which is a... nobody uses
he's got
elevator,
all
okay?
This one, isn't he?
yeah, but no, his cover is a Metropolis elevator's jumpsuit. So that's he's got a kind of Michael Myers-esque jumpsuit on here, right? And we're not to the whole identity reveal yet, but he does show that I've got a bomb on her cousin, and it's this device. And anyway, so she has now come face to face with Adrian. We cut back to the elevator, and Chloe empties out her purse, and well, Jimmy sees that she still has some pictures of them. She's like, oh, I should have taken that out a while ago, and then that kind of thing. So
that's sweet. Maybe he has it. I think that gives him the hope of rekindling it, doesn't it? That, you know,
she's like, that's not supposed to be in there. Where's it supposed to be,
like,
Chloe?
Oh,
right?
She still has feelings for me because she's keeping these photos. But yeah,
They're going through all her things. I love the line where she's like, I seriously doubt my secret Sam would give me a, and he opens it up, it's like, a bomb. And then I have the worst secret Santa ever. That was a very fun line.
Yeah, that's a good bit of writing there.
So we cut back to Adrian and Lois, and Adrian's looking over the article that she wrote, and he tells her that he's going to be dead by Christmas, you know, which, so we know it's not Christmas yet. It's leading up to it. He's the accelerated aging, and he goes on this whole backstory about how he, you know, it's some heavy stuff, right? It's like he was in a lab, and he broke out and to find his family because he had all these memories. He tells this story about how, like, his family had a very specific Christmas memory to kind of really get the point across that he has implanted memories. He went looking for this family he remembered. Turns out they didn't exist. It was all fiction. It's all fiction by Luther Corp. And now he wants Lois to get Lex to confess.
I don't know how he expects Lois. Well, how he expects Lois.
With a gun?
Yeah, with a gun. but that kind of backfires as well because Lex sees right through it because he says that Lois would never pull a gun on me or let alone Grant. So, you know, he sees through that plan a bit. Whether that was Adrian saw that was going to happen. So he was outside the door ready to come in and confront Lex anyway. But I see him as a victim of these horrible experiments and he just wants... He wants the truth to be out, and unfortunately, he does it in a way that that threatens other people's lives. But he has a motivation and a real motivation that you can kind of sympathize with.
Yeah, I mean, he's in a desperate situation, right? He's got nothing to lose. He has no one and nothing, and the only thing he can contribute left with his life is to make it not be in vain, right? So he's going through some extreme measures, and I don't think he really doesn't want to kill anybody. He just wants to get the truth out. So, but he knows that he's going to, I mean, it's a crazy story. I mean, I don't know, on Smallville at this point, it's not the craziest story in the world, actually. They've seen crazier things. We've been through stranger things. But, yeah, I mean, he's got to go to extreme measures to get Lois to get that confession. So we cut back to the elevator. It's the classic, like, if I hold my phone up further, I'll get better reception. I don't know if did you pull the antenna out all the way? Like, does that matter? Like, that's...
You wave it around a bit just to see if you can get a signal.
It's like, come on, like, and I think those sometimes little plastic antennas were just like a placebo. A lot of those old phones where it's like, you want to feel like you're doing something, but it does nothing. But of course, right, Chloe has to, she's like, all right, please come, Clark. And Jimmy's like, Clark? And then, you know, she's standing on his back. So then at that point, they all fall over. She drops the phone. She lands her foot on his hand and cuts him. And so she has a good cover. He's like, why don't you call 911? She's like, well, of course, somebody's monitoring us. They know if we did that. I'm like, all right, good. That's a good cover by Chloe. But clearly it's because Clark has superpowers. But this is a thing. This has been a thing throughout their whole relationship. She's always like, Clark, Clark, Clark. And Jimmy's like, what are you calling Clark for? What good is he going to do? So even though here's, and this is still going to be a problem with them. Or it would be if, you know, the relationship lasted. But even though she's honest with him about herself, she still at least lies about Clark. That hasn't changed. They had a whole thing going on in season six before she even knew she was a meteor freak. So anyway. So let me cut to Lois, and now she is now on the show Practical Jokers. Have you ever seen this show? It is a hilarious show. I got into it. My fiance really liked it, so we ended up watching it like all last New Year's. So we ended up we went on a trip, and it was nasty weather, so we spent a lot of time inside, and there was a whole marathon of these. Hilarious show. So it's like basically these guys, they put a hidden camera on somebody, and they have them do things that they tell them to do. You know, where it's like, it was my favorite episode of this. Just go, you know, this humor is not for everybody, right? It's not quite Jackass, right? That's kind of like the extreme of that, if you know what that is. But this is like a nice middle ground of that. My favorite episode of this, the most, because you feel so uncomfortable for what they're telling the people to do, right? So there's one where one of the guys, he's on the tram tour at Universal Studios, and they keep telling him to pull the emergency lever. So he keep, and it, you know, when they pull the emergency lever, the tram stops, like, shh, the emergency lever has to pull. Please proceed to the blah, 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 blah. And there's, you know, there's 100 people on this tram. And this, and he keeps pulling the lever. And they're like, sir, can I help you? He's like, oh, yeah, I was just wondering how long this is going to take. Like, they tell him these dumb things to ask. It's like, oh, yeah, so, hey, can you, I didn't get a picture. Can we go back for a second? And like, like, it's so uncomfortable. And Universal Studios is in on it, right? So it's not like, but it's more about the people around him. Like, can you imagine being one of those other people? Yeah. And then finally, like they bring security out to take him away, like the fifth or sixth time he does it. Because one time he's like, shh, hey, I just want to say I'm really sorry about that. Like, it's just so funny. And then people start booing him. They applaud when he gets thrown off. Anyway, it's very funny. Check it out. Practical Jokers. They do a lot of fun stuff. But to me, that was the most like uncomfortable one to watch. Thinking about being that person, or thinking about being one of the other people on the tram tour who don't know what's going on. But anyway, this is where we are, because Adrian has, you know, he's got a bug in Lois's ear. He's got a little camera on her, little brooch on her jacket, which is a nice way to hide it. He's hiding out in some equipment closet or something, and she has the briefcase and all this stuff. So she's going to go in there, talk to Lex. And it is funny, like the show does seem to know that Lex and Lois have no scenes together ever. Because when they go in there, Lex is like, ah, Miss Lane, I haven't seen Miss Lane since I caught her breaking into my office, and that was a few episodes ago, and that kind of thing. But in the meantime, before we get there, Bizarro and Lana show up at the Daily Planet, because it's an interesting continuity drop. Bizarro remembers that Chloe helped translate some Kryptonian. From Lionel and all this stuff. Like, not that he doesn't know what it means, but to try and figure out some kind of pattern. Right, that's the key, right? Because Lionel had been scribbling all the Kryptonian, and Chloe had some algorithm or something that she used to figure out what it meant. That was a couple seasons ago. So Bizarro remembers that. So that's good continuity in explaining why he's here, why Lana's here, why they've come to the Daily Planet. But of course, Chloe's not at her desk because she's trapped in the elevator. So.
Yeah, and it also gives Bizarro the motivation to save Chloe, because she's the one that, you know, that can do that. So it's a great kind of foil to, you know, Clark needs to save Chloe, but it's actually Bizarro needs to save Chloe, because he needs Chloe to, you know, to decipher the Kryptonian language. So it's clever writing, actually. It's really good. I was quite impressed with it.
So let me cut to Lois in the office there, and, you know, Lex and her have their back and forth, and I guess him and Grant just flew in on the chopper from fencing at the mansion, I guess. And Adrian's like asking about Project Gemini, so we got a plus one for episode title set and episode for Project Gemini. And Gemini, I mean, obviously that's a astrological figure, like the twin fish and all that, so it makes sense. This is a great Smallville title, because there's a Project Gemini. Right, it's about the cloning. There's multiple Julian Luthers, and Clark and Bizarro are Geminis as well. So, like, on every level of what they're saying here, the title applies, and I really like it. So this is actually a really good title. So, you know, Lois, they start going back and forth with what Adrian's saying, and he's like, tell him who he's talking to. She's like, Adrian says hi, and then she pulls out a gun and points it at Grant, and then, so as you said, like, Lex sees through this very quickly, right?
Yeah, definitely. I like the way she pulls out the gun, and then it's her dramatic switch, because she points it at Lex first, And then she said, if you didn't tell me what I know, and that dramatic swing of the arm to over to Grant, I thought that was quite entertaining. but yeah, that statue or award, whatever he hits around the head with, that looks sharp. And there didn't appear to be any kind of blood injury to her head, which there really should have been, given the weight and shape of that object.
Yeah, I guess this is another award that Lex planted there. Like all those pictures, that picture wall of Grant Gabriel with all the celebrities, like those are fake.
Yeah.
Like this was unsustainable. This is an unsustainable plan. Like the logic of like elevating him to the public eye, being the editor of the Daily Planet. You don't think other people could figure out this whole guy's life was a fabrication? Anyway, that just draws attention. Mm. Like the award, the pictures, that just draws attention to it, right? But, you know, Lois had said this whole thing about the memories. Right, that Adrian had. He is also wise to Lex here, because he calls him out. And he's like, "Why'd you knock her out? Like, because she wouldn't hear the truth? Because those are my memories, Lex." And he's like, "Oh, well, you know, don't worry about it." Like, it's just like, how long? I mean, so let me ask you this: like, the way I just think, like, I think of like rooms full of failed clones and two, like what happens to Lex later and what the super soldiers were last season, like. Was there only one failed Grant Gabriel? Did only one fan failed? Well, Julian Luther, I should say. Was there only one failed Julian Luther? Adrian, he escaped, or were there a lot and he was the only one to escape? What do you think?
I don't know. I kind of picture, you know, like is it Alien 3, where they go into that laboratory and they've got all these failed experiments in these glass cylinders, and some of them are hideously deformed. There's probably lots of really hideously deformed, very frightening looking Julians in tubes and failed tubes. But he must have had lots of failed experiments, because, you know, science is a step-by-step process. So there must have been failed attempts, and then maybe Adrian was the one that he thought was the one, and then, you know, saw he was accelerating, he was growing at a much faster pace. So yeah, so and then made Grant who was the success.
So Adrian shows up at this point, right? Let me say this. And Lex is like, his explanation is like, "You're the editor of a major newspaper. I'm sure all your information is prepared." Like, they're going to have some little story like that, right? At that point, Adrian shows up, right, and keeps talking. And, you know, Lex, like, wants him to stop. And Grant's like, no, let him talk. "How do you have my memories?" And he's like, "Because they're my memories. Because Lex made me," right? And, yeah, that's rough, man. Like, do you buy this actor as an older Michael Cassidy?
When I watched it the other week, I actually, for a second, I thought it was Michael Cassidy under a lot of makeup.
He has the makeup look to his face, doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought it might actually be Michael Cassidy, but then it turns out to be a guy called Tim Gwinney, is it?
Yeah, Tim Gwinney. And in The Companion, Michael Cassidy had this to say about working together with him. Quote, "Tim Gwinney, who played the other clone, is a great guy. I remember we went to get sushi and talked about what it might be like to see an older version of you. Do you recognize him, regardless of what he looks like? It's different to seeing an identical twin, even. You're seeing yourself. It's hard to figure out how to play a scene where the guy who's threatening your girlfriend turns out to be you." So, I don't know, like, Smallville has a thing where, like, they have clones that are identical, and then they have clones that look nothing like the other people. Like, you don't look that different. Like, the say Grant Gabriel, late 20s or whatever, right? As we established, he should be 16-ish. But we'll just... Yeah. So that's its own... That doesn't apply to this...
16-year-old right? Editor of a newspaper.
You do look different from 16 to, like, 50 or whatever. But let's just say Adrian is, like, what? Late 50s here, right? You don't look that different. Like, I think as cheesy as it would have been, or that would have given the game away, right? If it's Grant, unless you don't see his face until now. And he pulls off a scarf and a fedora, and it's right. Maybe that would have been too comic booky, but we're talking about clones and dead already. So like, I don't know. I think the actor does a good job. I don't think they're the same. I don't look at them and think they're like the same. So,
no, I think Tim is slightly the better actor.
Oh, no question.
I mean, yeah.
Oh
yeah, poor Michael.
You'll get
poor
there, Michael, one day. Yes. I don't know. It's just I don't want to dog too hard on the guy. I just think he was miscast.
No,
I just think this was like this is not a good fit for him for whatever reason. And plus, the storyline sucks too. So everything is working against him. Also, he has to have scenes with Michael Rosenbaum, right? I mean, like the best actor, him and John Glover, the best actors on the show. So anyway, did you ever see the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, The Sixth Day?
The Sixth, yeah.
So that's another thing. Speed as well, but that is here too. Because yeah. I'm you, you're me. Like, he literally tells him, you're me. And then, so that's why I went there. But identical clones. Anyway, a crock pot of movies ideas in this one. But at least they remixed them all. It wasn't just, you know, Fast and the Furious. You know, Fatal Attraction. You know, Frequency. Like, we both love season 3. But season 3 was the biggest offender of that. Like, there was a string of episodes. Yeah. Or like they just, what's hot right now? Let's make that a movie. So anyway, I got some The Sixth Day vibes here too, because they both think they're the real, he thinks he's the real person. That's an interesting idea too, right? If you're the clone and who's real, but neither of them are real. That's the issue here.
Yeah, I definitely got as well. I think you'll appreciate it. It's when they're talking to each other, Adrian and Grant, and they're finishing each other's sentences off, and then they actually speak at the same time, reminding me very much of Fringe. Smallville fans, if you're enjoying the storyline, you might want to watch Fringe, where the Observer, who is this very strange character, the very mysterious character, finishes off Peter's sentences and talks at the same time as Peter. So I got a very deja vu of that scene as well. Very interesting kind of trope going in there, science fiction trope.
Although on Fringe it makes sense because he's a telepath.
It makes total sense on Fringe, this, and not a lot of sense
you
here.
Would not finish the sentences of your clone. Like, it doesn't work that way. Like, it just
it doesn't, does it?
Smallville and cloning, man, it's so strange. This season alone, there's clones, like Kryptonian clones in the last episode, right? But they, replicants, as Lara called them, right, they have all the memories, but memories well past they should have. Like, in season 9, all this Kryptonian, like, if you're... Clones should not have memories. Clones are genetic, all right? Like, you don't... Memories is not that, okay? But if you're going to say that they should, which they shouldn't, but if you're going to say they should, season 9 did it best. Because when Jor-El clones all the Kryptonians, Zod and all those guys, their last memory is their blood being drawn, because that's where they came from. That makes sense. I'm going to say Kryptonian clone technology can do that. Fine. But then Blue, the last episode that we talked about here on the podcast, Lara's like, I remember the planet blowing up. No. That's not clones. That's not correct. Anyway, so I don't mind all this cloning stuff because it's comic books, right? Lex Luthor and Luthor Corp. Lex himself, as will happen on Smallville, is a clone many times in the comic books, is staying alive, using his science to extend his life and all that. Totally fine. Like, in concept, I like all that. But sometimes look, of all the cloning stuff they're doing, though, I mean, this one is pretty good. Like, I will say, like, I hate the fact that it's Grant Gabriel exists and all this stuff. But the idea of Lex trying to make a family, right? Because and that really pisses off Adrian. Because, you know, he mentions, like, a clone of Lex's brother died when he was 12. He's like, your brother? You did all this so you can have a little brother? Like, that really, like, sets him off on a new thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, because, I mean, there's one line that Grant says, which is probably the best line he's given in his entire run of the show, is that, I am living proof that you've forgotten how to love. And there's this interesting dichotomy with Lex Luthor, isn't there? That he's so desperate to get a family back and have his brother, but he's actually incapable of giving or receiving love as we see it. He's got this tainted, twisted version of it that, you know, that isn't real love.
Yeah, it's 100% selfish. He's like, I want a family, so I'm going to create a person. But that's how someone like Lex Luthor would think. Like, all these actions totally track. Like, trying to clone Lana. I'm surprised he didn't try to clone his mom at some point, you know? But perhaps, like, the whatever kind of birth fluid they had of Julian, or what, umbilical cord, or whatever they ended up explaining that, you know, where he got the DNA from. Like, perhaps that works better because it was a younger, whatever, right? We'll just roll with that. Lex matches Adrian's energy because he's like, you told this from me or your brother's like, you're not my brother, you're a mistake. And then he just shoots him dead. I'm like, wow.
That's harsh.
That is cool. And then Grant's like, oh, I just saw Lex kill my older self. And then Adrian drops the kill switch that he had, dead man switch he had. And that sets off the C4 in the elevator for Chloe and Jimmy. We have a tense moment where they think they're going to die, right?
Yeah, and that's when they have their little heart-to-heart moment because, you know, the clock's running, so you better get everything out that you wanted to say.
I do like she says, I imagine this happening to a Kelly Clarkson song. which is so much for my happy ending. That's right.
Yeah, and not obnoxious Christmas music.
They you know, they are aware of the Christmas music, so that is a good thing. Yeah. A comedy, right?
I like that they're aware of it because we're very aware of it at this point.
And this is rough, right? I mean, they think they're going to die right here, right now. There's no way out. And luckily, Bizarro sees the note, one of the many attempts that Lois tried to make to send to Chloe about the bomb. He uses his super hearing, which is the current version of super hearing, is let's zoom in on somebody's face and then blow out all the highlights and then do a 360 around them on the image, right? That's fine. Yeah. And he hears, help, help, because they are banging. Like, it's a last-ditch effort. Like, we might as well just scream and bang, and maybe someone will hear us, right? I don't know if they can do anything, but you would in that situation as well if you're trapped in an elevator, thought you were going to die. He hears this, and then he flies up the staircase. This is a leap. This could go either way, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is definitely a purposeful visual clue as to whether he is Clark or Bizarro, because it looks a lot like flying. His movements and actions don't look quite like a jump. It looks to me like a it could be a leap. I don't know, but it looks like flying to me. That's how I took it anyway.
Yeah, I'm cool with the flying. Has she shown him the meteor power or no? Does that happen here?
No, she tells him that she's a meteor freak, and then it's later on in the printer room, I guess.
That's right, she heals his hand. That's right. So she tells him she's a meteor freak. While all this is going on, right, she tells him that she's a meteor freak, and then he kisses her anyway. But, like, so many times, like, you know, and this, we laugh at these characters and say it's bad writing, but it's true. People build up the worst case scenarios when they need to tell someone something, right? And it's usually not going to be that bad, right? So we can all sit here and talk, well, Clark, why didn't you just tell Lana your secret? Or Chloe, why didn't you just tell Jimmy your meter freak? But we've all done it ourselves in other areas of our lives. Like, I don't know how they're going to take it. And you build it up so bad in your mind that it keeps you from doing anything you should do. So that tracks, you know? So I think that's fine. I'm not a shipper for these two, but you know what? If they thought they were going to die, they were honest with each other, got to share a kiss. Little did they know Bizarro was going to fly in and save the day. And it's a really cool shot to see him go up the staircase and that kind of thing. The classic non-Superman things going on. But he throws the Bizarro throws the I'm just calling him Bizarro. I'm done for calling him Clark at this point, right? Because he throws the bomb out the Daily Planet. We see nice little explosion outside the reindeer and all that. So anyway, a good save, a nice super save, non-altruistic, as we come to know. And oh, by the way, I did like the talking about the Christmas party. It does keep coming back to that, right? So when Bizarro does the super, he flies up there, but then he kind of runs slow motion through. We see like a Santa Claus and a mistletoe and all kinds of stuff going on. It pays off though, because after the bomb blows up, the elevator doors open, and where are Jimmy and Chloe? But at the Christmas party. And their embrace ends, and they part, and all the people we saw earlier, like the mail lady, are all just like looking in on them, like, ooh.
Mail lady, yep.
And they just have this goofy smile. It was a cute moment, and they just both kind of sit there, and it was cute. So
yeah, it's a very cute moment. I do like, I think it's Ashmore. He kind of, I think he moves and crosses his legs and kind of puts his hands on his lap and just kind of smiles at everyone. Yeah, that was quite cute. I quite like that.
So then we cut to Lois waking up in the office, and Lex is the one there to greet her as she wakes up. And she's like, oh yeah, Adrian escaped. I'm like, yikes, you're going to just cover up this murder? Like, that's sure, you know. But here's the big turn where Lois is like, I'm going to bring you down, and surprise, but Lex has said, but big surprise, 1-2 punch here. Lex says, one, you're no longer writing the article about me, but two, I'm your boss. Merry Christmas, Lois. I just bought the Daily Planet. And in the companion, Carolyn Dryas had this to say about why they had Lex buy the Daily Planet. Quote, as Lex is starting to burn bridges in every part of his world, we were writing a lot of scenes where it's Lex and a guest character. So story-wise, we found a way to infuse Lex back into the original cast lives by putting him right in the middle of the activity of the Daily Planet. It was also a very Luthor thing to do and a good way to create stories. And I agree. I mean, like, you think about Lex and Clark aren't friends anymore. Lex and Lana are broken up. He has no association with any of these other characters, right? So anybody, it's like Scientist of the Week or Assistant of the Week or his clone brother, right? You got to plug him back into the A-plots more often, at least with the main characters, right? And this is a smart way to do it. And also, I mean, there's a precedent for this. Lex has bought the Daily Planet in the comics. I think about Lois and Clark, the two-part season one finale. Those are my favorite episodes of that show. He buys the Daily Planet. And it's interesting. I think all the way back in, like, season one, he's trying to use Roger Nixon, that reporter for the Inquisitor. He's like, my dad's obsessed with the Daily Planet, but I know the Inquisitor is read by the people. So I thought maybe he would buy another paper, like, you know, and maybe compete that way. But this is where we are. Half of our characters work at the Daily Planet now. So it's a good, I think it's a real smart way to kind of tie up why Lois can't do what she wants to do and bring down Lex, because he's the final say now. And also, you know, to insert him back into the other characters' lives. So I thought that was a really good decision.
Yeah, definitely. It helps us get some storylines with Lois and Chloe and Lex. And it's nice to have Chloe and Lex kind of interacting, because they have done in the past, so it's nice to have him in a place with near her as well. So, but I did wonder, when does Lex buy the paper? Does he do it as he's standing there watching over an unconscious Lois, or has it been done in a premeditated way and done much more before?
I think perhaps this article is like a feature story on the new owner of the Daily Planet, and that's the purpose of it, right? And it was going to announce that, and maybe that's why he wanted Lois to be there for that, just to kind of twist the knife. Perhaps, I don't know.
Yeah,
but this is all. Yeah, they didn't just that did not get decided then. That was some behind the scenes moving and shaking, right?
Nah, right.
So then we get to our scene with Chloe and Henry James Olsen in the copy room on the side, and I don't like they did this yet again. Chloe's like, oh, when the world's gonna end, I do this thing where I just grab the closest guy and kiss her. I'm like, how dare you? How dare you undercut my favorite kiss of the entire series, Chloe and Clark at the end of Vessel. Like, that annoys me. They can't, like, clearly they didn't know what they were going to do with any of these characters when they did that. But then their constant, like, undercutting of it, like, every time they mention it again, like, really annoys me. No big deal. I'm like, come on, y'all. Like, that was a big crescendo. I felt like that was really earned throughout season five. You know, their whole, what they had going on over here and Lex and Lana over there, and those kind of came to a head. And I just, it annoys me when they act like it was no big deal, but be that as it may. Did you like Clark and Chloe together as a couple at all? Or I don't know. You tell me.
I did. I really liked, I remember really liking those two together. And in fact, I actually liked them together better than early Clark and Lana. Actually, I think it was, you know, I always felt sorry for Chloe, especially in the early seasons when she was just having to watch Clark drool over Lana so much. So I always thought, so yeah, it was nice to have her have some happiness with Clark for a while. But that kind of excuse that she gives about, you know, every time I'm in a life situation, I lip lock with the nearest man, you know, not only does it kind of put some shade on the Vessel episode, but it's also a really crappy thing to say to someone who's just kissed you, who actually likes you a lot. It's just not a very nice excuse to kind of come up with.
Yeah, it's like, oh, they didn't mean anything. Like, oh, thanks, I thought we had a moment. So
cheers, Chloe.
Oh man, yeah. So they mentioned Kara, but whatever, I guess, right? I mean, it's just like they just kind of like, oh, we better just at least mention her, because that they deleted the whole scene with Jimmy talking to Lana at the beginning of the episode, where he at least, I mean, that's why that was an important scene to have, right? But, you know, out of sight, out of mind, she's gone, she's not coming back, and she's not returning Jimmy's calls, so I guess it's on to the next. Good for you, Jimmy. I mean, he went from Chloe to Kara back to Chloe. I'm like, hey, man, good for you. Don't be waiting around. You just keep doing you. So
yeah, good on him.
Then she shows him her meteor power, and he's got a real nasty cut on his finger from her shoe. I'm like, that looks like a serious, like, deep paper cut or something. So we see the whole, like, bright light, and she like sticks her hand out kind of thing, which they hadn't quite figured out Chloe's power yet either, and not that it really matters because it's gone by the end of the scene, but like she cried a tear to resurrect Lois. But now they've decided it's gonna be like a hand thing. Like she does the hand thing here with Jimmy, she does it to Lex and in a few episodes, and then she never uses it again. I mean, she kind of uses it to defend herself against Brainiac, which kind of messes that whole thing up. So that's sort of interesting. But that's it. This is why I always say it's a waste, because they introduce it like late season 6, and then by the end of season 7, it's not a thing. not a thing. I just don't like her being a meteor freak. Like, yeah. She just could have been a normal person. You know what I mean?
When does Chloe exit the show? I can't remember.
Well, technically, she's here the whole time. Beginning of season 10, she's only in a handful of episodes of season 10. But she never, like, leaves. So she is Chloe running the ISIS Foundation in season 8, and then she's around in season 9. She's Watchtower, so she goes on to do other things. And I do like Jimmy's like, oh, so is this about you're so super smart? She's like, no, my nerd is all natural, right? Which is cute, but then in season 8, it becomes, no, you're super smart because of Brainiac. So it's funny that they they mention that here.
Yeah, because I only ask because it seems, I don't know any of the behind the scene stuff, but it just seems at this point they didn't really know what to do with Chloe, so they gave her a power for a bit to see if that could give the character any agency. You've got Lois who's starting to become a reporter, which is kind of pushing Chloe's role out the window. So it just seems they were a bit lost with the character of Chloe at this point and didn't really know what to do with her.
It's like, well, we need to turn Lois into Chloe, so what do we do with Chloe?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, guys, you should have just thought this through years ago, but Jimmy also says, like, can you fly?
So lame.
I know it's a Superman show, but that is a lame line right there.
It's lame.
But Jimmy says, still the same Chloe, right? So these crazy kids are going to be fine. They're going to work it out. So then we get Lex signing off all the paperwork for the Daily Planet. This is Gina, his assistant, who at the time I was like, it's Mercy Graves. But it's not Mercy Graves. We get our own version of Mercy Graves. And again, had they had any foresight? Well, they didn't know Tess needed to show up and Michael Rose's mom's going to leave and all these things. But this character obviously should have been Tess, you know? And then obviously he would not have killed her, spoilers. But this would have been like, oh, cool, his assistant. And anyway, but they're signing all the paperwork and whatnot, and they're going to make, some layoffs and those sorts of things. So some cold-hearted corporate...
Get rid of the deadwood.
...decisions are happening here at the Daily Planet. Yeah, I mean, come on, man. Goodness gracious. So anyway, Grant comes in and he's... He's pissed. You know, he's very pissed. And are you so desperate to mean something to someone, you take that risk, right? About, like, cloning the brother and killing. I mean, yeah, because Grant Gabriel is now, even though he, not only has he found he's a clone, he's an accessory to murder because he just saw Lex kill his, you know, his own clone. And I, you know, that's its own conversation. Like, you can't, like, call the cops about that, right? I mean, what do you do, right? So he's in a tough spot.
I'm quite glad the character of Grant exits the show. Next episode where he kind of exits in persona? I think that's when Grant.
That is correct. They wrap all that
that's
up.
That's good because
this episode, just when he was getting interesting,
yeah, I
though.
Mean, yeah, he was getting interesting, and I like the fact I like this scene where he faces up to Lex and goes, you know, I'm the living proof that you've forgotten how to love. And that, you know, and it's a really good conversation, and it does give his character agency. And of course, Lois and Grant split up, so that's the end of that as well.
Oh, by the way, we see the Veritas window, or not the Veritas window, in this scene behind Lex, very prevalent.
I've been giggling to myself listening to this season with this whole Veritas thing.
Like, had they not, again, I'll say it every episode, had they just put it there at the beginning of season 7, I would have been more forgiving. But no, it's not. We are deep into the season now. This is halfway through the season. Nope, still that old L, right? But yeah, I mean, Grant's like, you really thought you'd keep this a secret? Like, yeah, first of all, don't do the age acceleration.
Mm.
Like, you got to keep him the right age. And you can't let any clones escape, right? And you need to think of a better backstory, right? Because someone's going to find this out. People will be like, where are you, right? Like, where have you been your whole life? Like, anyone with, like, investigating this guy for 5 minutes. I don't know, the Luthers are pretty powerful. I guess they could make some stuff up. But, like, Grant says, like, your cracks are starting to show, man. And Lex, eventually, like, Lex tries to push back. He's like, you're going to believe that lunatic? And then eventually he's like, look, you can't punish me for wanting a family. I'm like, well, that's really what it comes down to. And as you said, that's what he tells me. He's like, I'm living proof that you've forgotten how to love. And then he drops the whole free will one-liner on him.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to play God, remember his greatest gift, free will, mic drop, and he leaves. So Lex is there to stew in his own thoughts. And as you said, we're going to wrap up Grant and Lois's epic love story. I mean, I'd forgotten that they broke up. Like, there was an actual, like, a breakup scene. Like, I just thought, like, he died and they didn't really mention it, which is kind of what happens. I mean, I know they had just broken up, but, you know, I honestly don't remember what Lois's reaction to this, if we even see her have a reaction. Because, yeah, sure, you might have just broke up, but one, you literally just broke up. And two, like, that was your boss. Like, like you think you'd have an actual reaction to this guy disappearing, you know, because who knows what explanation Lex has given everyone to what happened to Grant Gabriel, right? But,
yeah, and the breakup scene gives the show the excuse to put their contemporary pop song, or rather ballad, which is Cancelling Christmas by Michelle Featherstone, which is a really depressing song, but, you know, played under a breakup, relationship breakup, I suppose it fits.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is appropriate for a breakup moment. Yeah. And I guess, I don't know, this is kind of exhausting because they were going to break up the last episode, remember? And then, you know, keep it a secret and then not keep it a secret. And it's like, y'all, like, all this back and forth is, I'm really getting whiplash from all this. Like, are you going to be a couple or not? And then, like, oh, we got to be honest. And then we're going to lie anyway to, like, Lex and Chloe think we broke up and we didn't. And just kind of over all this back and forth. And but to be honest, like, for all the flack I've given these characters in this relationship, like, this is probably their best scene the whole time, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I do think from here on, actually, Lois starts to become a better character as well. Just not having a linked, connected to a man all the time, and actually starting to establish her as a reporter and as an independent woman, and as a character that works without having to rely on a relationship with a man until she gets a Clark, of course. But it gives the chance for the character to build up as the archetype that the show wants her to be.
Yeah, and the reasoning for them breaking up is the same reason they were going to break up in the last episode.
Yeah.
By the way, it's not that, like, hey, I killed a guy and I'm a clone, and, you know, like, it's just like, hey, you know what? I'm your boss and this is probably inappropriate. And so, like, I don't know. Like, yeah. That's where we are. It is cute where he's like, you take the elevator, I'll take the stairs. He's like, of course I'll take the stairs. I'm like, oh, that's, if I liked y'all as a couple, that would be a real bittersweet ending to y'all. But yeah. I didn't, so I'm glad it's over. It's all there is to it. I do like how well decorated that the Talon apartment is, though.
Oh, yeah,
Chloe and Lois
good.
Really put a lot of time in. It's got a Christmas tree and lights everywhere. And
but as the song says, the Cancelling Christmas. They're going to have to take all the decorations down now.
That's it, right? But then we cut back to the Kent farm, and we get some more stock footage of Snowy Kent farm, and we have Chloe and Bizarro catching up about everything next to the fire, and she thanks him for channeling his inner Bruce Willis, because Die Hard as well, like, so many movies in this crockpot of this
the pop culture references just keep on coming.
She uses the program and to decipher what these symbols are meaning, and it's like a high-tech system that can't start. And they figure out that it's the Brain Interactive Construct.
Oh,
he's back.
Brainiac.
And this is a very effective way to slowly bring him back into the show. Because I buy this supercomputer would take time to, like, from the dust, it became goo. From the goo, it possessed people. It's taking minerals and it's rebuilding itself and it's going around and around. And we finally get James Marsters back in the next episode. But I think that's a really cool way to tease that he's coming without having to show him and explain what's been going on. And
it's a good scene, actually, for Tom Welling, because I think when they're talking about it and Chloe's saying, you know, it's a computer trying to boot up, but there's an error code and stuff like that. But and then he almost has like a gleeful look in his eyes. And I think that's another clue. Again, it might just be me putting an impressionistic view of what I think Tom Welling's doing to kind of give us clues. But he has a gleeful look in his eye when he's talking about Brainiac coming back.
Ooh, he's back. Yeah. And even before that, too, subtle stuff, because he's like, thanks, Chloe. I don't know what I'd do without you. I'm like, it feels so like, I know I should say this, like, but I don't really think it. Like, it settles. You could just say, we would make fun of Tom Welling if he said that line a few seasons ago as Clark, but now it's an intentional acting choice. Yeah. So I thought it was
And he's lying to Lana. It's like, I fell in love with you all over again. So it's just like,
yeah, but that might be true though. Right.
Here's
the thing though.
That's it.
Because he's actually being honest, because that is him instead of his memories. Because Chloe leaves and Lana Clark and Mazzaro have some time together. I guess there's no direct sunlight. That's why he's not getting turning to stone.
Yeah.
Right. but anyway, it's so is he Just a brief minute. Is he really in love with Lana? Like, I would say yes, because it's based off of Clark's memories in his life. So it's not just like a, oh, cool, I get to be with this guy, I'm impersonating his girl. I'm like, no, I actually am that guy in my own way. And so, like, there's actually some interesting narrative connections you can make here between, like, Grant and Bizarro and Clark and Adrian and all that stuff. I don't think they quite stick the landing of tying it all together like the best Marvel episodes do, tying that, like, everything's layered and all that. But there is something to say here for, like, the whole identity and memories and all that. And that's what I love about your sci-fi, the questions that you can... I mean, Fringe, there's so much of that.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking
of Fringe. There's loads of duality.
Probably why
Fringe.
I love that show
exactly.
so much.
Yeah.
So, if you love this episode, go check out Observing the Pattern, Fringe podcast by Luke Lynch. But, yeah, so they embrace, right? And they're like, oh, we're going to be fine, right? And this is where the twist comes, right? They see the... and it's Bizarro, like, oh, my God! It's Bizarro. And I guess some stray direct sunlight hit his face there, Luke. I don't know why that would have happened in that particular instance,
but it's more for
the audience than the character, right?
Yeah, they're at the kitchen window, and I suppose that side of his face was more towards the window, as it were, and it may have caught some sunlight. So, yeah, that's how I see it. But, yeah, but a great twist. And, you know, as I said, I didn't have anything spoiled for me, so it was a kind of whoa, what's gonna happen next episode. And of course they close it up pretty quick, but yeah, it was a great ending. I like it when they do these twist endings, and they don't do them that much on Smallville, so it's good when they can put these episodes in there and these cliffhangers.
Yeah, and for a mid-season finale cliffhanger.
Yeah, exactly. Mid-season.
That's, like, pretty effective. You're like, oh, my God, it's Bizarro. How long is it going to be there? What's going on? What's his goal? Because you don't know. Like, they establish more in the next episode that he really does just, like, love Lana and want Clark's life. Like, that's his goal. He has no evil master plan. Like, his master plan is to be able to become Clark, and his main concern is obviously his skin turning to stone, as they refer to it as for this version of Bizarro. But even, like, the little smile from him is like just this evil smile. So you can read into a lot of that, and they could go in a lot of directions with that. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And at this point, what ambitions would he have other than just to survive and live as Clark? So that makes sense. Yeah. But then we cut back to the Fortress of Solitude, and hey, we got a plus one for Blue Shirt Red Jacket, because Clark is still in it from the last episode. And it's night, and it's just this slow zoom in on frozen Clark sitting there in the fortress, and you think to yourself, what was Jor-El's plan? Why is Clark frozen here? And this is actually something that I had just headcanon, like, this is probably what it would be anyway, and the writer agrees with me. So Caroline Dry said this to say about the logic of Clark being frozen here in the fortress by Jor-El, quote, "His idea was that Clark's love for humanity and this girl Lana and doing anything to protect Chloe was distracting him. So if Clark was frozen until they age and die, he wouldn't be distracted when he's melted and popped back on Earth." So, fair enough. If he outlives all the people he loves and cares about, maybe he'll embrace his destiny. I don't know. Like, he would still, like, have an attachment to people.
Yeah.
Although we see in season 9, you know, when he kind of walks away from humanity, that's when he really starts his training with Jor-El at the beginning of that season. So maybe there's some logic there, but it's a dark thing to do. If Clark's purpose here is to, like, save the world, what if it gets blown up in the next 50 years before all these people die? Like, way to go, Jor-El. What if President-elect starts the nuclear holocaust like we've seen, right? But that is, I think that logically, I think that tracks. Like, sometimes you read these quotes about the intentions of characters and stuff, you're like, that's not in there. That's not in the show. You're just making that up. But as the computer program Jor-El, I can see it deciding to do this, you know? So...
yeah, it tracks
Clark,
to me.
As we know, he's refused to learn any lessons.
Yes. So. But as we know, you know, Clark's love of humanity and his compassion is actually what makes him Superman in the end. So, you know, whatever Jor-El's trying to do, it's wrong.
Today was just an example of why it's not a good idea for us to be together and work together. It's too complicated.
And I didn't even drag you to all the places I usually ruin a relationship.
Well, when you do decide to take that trip, he's a lucky guy.
Whoever he is, we sure as hell aren't gonna work together.
So, how are we going to liquidate? You'll take the elevator and I'll take the stairs?
Don't be ridiculous, Lane. I'll take the stairs.
Gemini got an 8.4 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 1.5 out of 5. So I ask you, Luke, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Gemini?
I really enjoyed it, actually. I mean, I know that we're a bit sick of the Grant and Lois love story and a bit sick of Jimmy and Chloe. So those kind of detract a little bit. But I think it's a good tense episode. I think there's some great tense moments and some good writing and a good mishmash of action thriller films that they've put in here. So I'm gonna give it a B minus.
Cool. I'm gonna give it a B.
Oh, okay.
Much like as you said, the Grant Gabriel and the Jimmy and Chloe and all that. Although there were sweet moments, although I don't like these characters and these relationships and all our time with them, like they were pretty, had some genuine moments here. Both those couples, and then even better, Grant and Lois broke up.
Yeah.
So there we go. And it was entertaining, you know, it was an entertaining episode, all mixing all these movie plots together, you know,
yeah, they pack a lot in actually.
And you got speed and yeah. You got, you know, Christmas. So,
phone booth.
I mean, you know, exactly. So yeah, I didn't even think about phone booth, but yeah, so because she's on the phone, that makes so much sense. Phone, that was pretty, I mean, that was a few years before this, maybe around this time actually.
Yeah.
Joel Schumacher, by the way, directed that. So people give him a lot of flack for his Batman movies. I still love Batman Forever in its own way, but he is a great director. He's directed some Falling Down, you know, The Lost Boys, Family Opera. Big fan of that.
Oh, Lost Boys, great
I know that's
film.
Kind of lots of mixed reactions for Family Opera, but I really do love that one. Yeah, Joel Schumacher, very talented director, and just because he put nipples on the bat suit does not make him a bad director. His filmography is very impressive. But anyway, Phone Booth is one of them. So, B for me, B minus for you. Let's go to the tally board. We have a plus one for Blue Shirt, Red Jacket, because we see Clark in it at the end, Frozen in the Fortress. That brings us to 66. We have an episode title, seven episode, Project Gemini. That brings us to 57. It would be Hospital Visit, plus one, because Casey Brock, the lab assistant from a couple episodes ago, is in some facility somewhere that Lana has put her in. ISIS Foundation has a wide reach, apparently. But that brings us to 112.
Wow.
Hospital Visits. So there you have it. Final question, Bechdel test, pass or fail? Chloe and Lois talk. They do mention Clark, though.
Yeah, they do. I think it's a fail, to be honest, in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Because they talk about Clark fixing the antenna or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not romance and stuff, but it's still about a guy. So that's the rules of the Bechdel test are sometimes up for interpretation, but we're gonna say fail this week for the Bechdel test. But all right, Luke, well, that was a lot of fun talking Smallville with you, man.
I had great fun today. Thank you very much for inviting me on.
Absolutely. If people want to find you out there online, where can they find you?
You can find me personally on Twitter at Luke_Winch. As Zach said at the beginning, I am a podcast on the We Made This Podcast Network. I host my own show about Fringe, which is the cult TV show that ran for 5 seasons. We have just finished our coverage of season 3. We're going to take a break over Christmas and be back the beginning of February for season 4. So if you've never seen the show, you can, as we said, you can get a hold of it Amazon Prime, but then you have to pay for Stars 3 Amazon Prime. It's very convoluted. They should make it much simpler. You can also find me co-hosting on our podcast 616, which is our Marvel Universe podcast. We're currently doing Hawkeye TV series. I'm on there with Tony Black, who is the showrunner and chief of We Made This. So that's where you can find me at the minute.
Yep, no, me and Tony are good friends. He's been on the podcast a couple of times, but we'll have him back on again at some point. He's a busy guy.
He is a very busy
you
know, man.
He is you guys think I podcast a lot. Tony Black, master podcaster. So, but he'll be back on the show sooner or later. And yeah, man, We Made This. There's a lot of good shows out there. I've been a guest on a handful of those shows, especially the Friends show most recently. And yeah, check it out. The X-Cast is over there, right? And all that good stuff. So as for me, more on Zach on Twitter. Host a couple other podcasts on the United Federation of Podcasts, Franchise Fatigue and Sasswatch. You can find us on Twitter at UFP Earth. podcast here, Always Mallville, with one S on Twitter, Always Hold On to Smallville on Facebook, and you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again, with one S. That's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back next time talking about Persona. But until then, always hold on to Smallville.
I'm not drinking no eggnog. There'll be no midnight clear. I won't be singing any carols. I'm canceling Christmas this year. I'm not giving.
Always Hold On to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Chris Fuchs, Cavante Chillis, Dallas Hernandez, Darren Kirsch, Joy Deanberg, JJ Hodges, DJ Duenna, Nathan Rothatcher, Nathan McKenzie, Jason Skipper, Steve Rogers, Joe Mickendo, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, John Curcio, Mike Franz, Dylan D'Antonio, Thomas Navin, Andrew Parker, James Lee, Jonathan England, Adam Sullins, Joe Michael, Zachary Burkhalter, Mark Itzfoppen, Alex Ramsey, Jason Davis, Patrick Bravo, Patricia Carrillo, Jacob Stevenart, Diana Bias, Corey Moore, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Eddie Bissell, Jim Thomas, Nicholas Fansler, Catherine Caldwell, Will Hunt, Clunk Kant, Mariana Sachi, Tom Gerke, Nicholas Coso, Erica Flynn, Jared Gibbs, Anthony Anderson, Jasmine Magelli, Keith Falls, Lauren D., James Hart, and Melissa Brown. Thank you so much to all these patrons. And you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.